Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. One of the surest signs of spring around here is the annual visit from our friends at the Missouri Botanical Garden to talk about spring planting and gardening. It's starting to warm up a little more consistently these days, and that's giving a lot of people the itch to work on their gardens, lawns, and shrubs. Joining us to answer your questions are two favorites from the Missouri Botanical Garden. June Hudson is horticulturalist, consultant, and designer at the Kepper Center for Home Gardening there. Chip Tynan is manager of the Horticulture Answer Service at the Garden. Our lines are open at 382-8255. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. That's talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or send us a tweet at STL on Air if you have gardening questions. Joan and Chip, nice to see you again.
Oh, great to see you, too. Nice to see you, too.
It's like the robins and the swallows coming back to Capistrano and the buzzards in Hinckley, a sure sign of spring.
Absolutely.
Is when you guys show up.
Oh.
Thanks for being here. June, let me start with you. What kind of conditions has this winter left us in terms of horticultural things?
Well, we've hardly can complain about the winter, can we? I mean, I think it was up to 10.6 inches of snow, and that's an accumulative amount. We could get that easily in one downfall, but we did not. So that was the good news. However, the moisture level is, I've been looking at the ground all over the garden, and it's dry. It might not be dry way deep, but it's dry on the top. So we could use a little moisture, not as much as we are seemingly going to have. But it's so far, I mean, things are popping out of the ground because they never did really freeze solidly. So, you know, it looks like it's going to be an early spring. Things are trying to come up. We've got narcissus that are starting to bloom. And some of the earlier bulbs, too, snowdrops are blooming, witch hazels are in full bloom. So spring is right on the cusp.
Chip, how early is it for all of this?
Well, that's an interesting question. It depends on how you want to calculate it and all. It is early. But one of the ways that I use to calculate it is by keeping track of the average daytime high and the low temperature. And averaging out to an average temperature for the day, equals a total that's above 50 degrees, then we've accumulated what we call growing degree days. And as of yesterday, we had accumulated a total of 46 growing degree days, which places us at about the 12th of April of where we might be in an average year, whenever we have average years. So we're running upwards of 4 weeks ahead of the season at this point in time.
Perhaps we shouldn't get our confidence up too high, because I can recall April snows in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
So what does that mean for people who are thinking about getting out in the gardens? What should they be thinking and doing at this point?
I don't think with the temperatures that we've achieved and the predicted 10-day forecast, we aren't going to have a choice, because our plants are going to leave us in the lurch if we're not out in the garden. Doing something anyway, and certainly, you know, like removing leaf cover that might be on lawns, for instance, probably wouldn't be a bad idea to leave mulches in place around ornamental plants. But this could be, when we have these kinds of warm-ups, this could become a boon or a bust. And the boon, especially if you're interested in growing a fan of cool season vegetables like spinach. This bodes well for spinach and peas getting started. You know, we're almost to St. Patrick's Day, and, you know, that's often the traditional date for starting to plant your potatoes. So, you know, the season is moving on.
June, if we do get a freeze, if we do get some snow, is that curtains for what has already started to pop?
It depends. If you're talking about trees and it freezes, yes, we saw some magnolias in full bloom coming here. And you want to enjoy them because they're so beautiful. But you're just apprehensive that they'll get to bloom out to their full capacity before any cold snap comes along. But you just have to be cognizant that anything could happen right now, and not to delve into something so quickly that you and like Chip said, removing heavy leaves that are, you know, on your grass or heavy in your shrubs. You can remove some of that and finish up your winter pruning. If you know that it's time to prune whatever you have, then it's a good time to study the form on that so that you don't have to worry about that once spring really hits. But I would just be apprehensive about taking much off of low perennial plants. A lot of them have their own foliage as a protectant. It wouldn't hurt to just leave that alone right now till you know that they're up so far. It's really not doing them any good.
I wanted to ask about pruning because I think there's some confusion as to what the best time of year to prune is. Is this, in fact, the best time, Chip?
It's a good time for some plants, but, if we're talking about a plant that's going to be flowering in the springtime, absolutely not. You don't want to do any pruning like for lilac bushes or forsythia bushes or even the spring flowering spireas, for instance, the shrubs. Any pruning now is going to reduce the overall flower show. Hmm. So, but for plants that say flower during summertime, would be a good time to go ahead and prune.
What's good advice for pruning? Not in terms of timing, but in terms of how to do it.
Do as little as possible. To start with, you can always take off more, but you can't glue the a good branch back onto the tree.
Sort of like hair, you know.
I wouldn't know about that.
That's true. Chip is right. Yeah. You know, be really careful what you prune. You can all, like you said, you know.
And please,
it's not going anywhere if you don't prune it. If it turns out not to be in the right place a little later on, you still have another chance to shape it up.
It's easier to overlook smaller plants in the garden, but for really large trees, please think first about calling a professional do the work.
Right. Why do we prune?
Well, for a variety of reasons. I mean, number one, I think, would be to remove dead wood. Mm-hmm. And then there's a certain amount of aesthetic shaping and pruning that goes hand in hand with pruning. To remove branches that interfere with each other, that cross and wound each other as they rub and blow in the wind. For the most part, that's a great question because a lot of people think that you absolutely have to prune. Mm-hmm. And particularly, large trees and shrubs, but you don't. Let the plant become the plant that it wants to be, that it's programmed to be. There's, genetics is playing a part in this. And particularly for really large trees, I think, think the removal of dead wood as a primary reason. And then beyond that, proceed cautiously.
Well, we're so aesthetically conscious. I think a lot of people just want their everything to look pretty and symmetrical and all the rest of it.
We don't all share the same sense of aesthetics.
That's very true. I want to be sure that folks have our telephone number. We'd like to get listeners into this conversation. I'm sure there are many good questions out there concerning the growing season, if you will, as we get ready for spring planting. We have Chip Tynan with us from the Missouri Botanical Garden and also June Hudson. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-2255. If you'd like to send us an email, do so at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. What about soil preparations, June? I'll come back to you for that. Anything in particular we should be doing at this stage?
Well, you have to make sure that the soil is not overly saturated because you can do more harm than good by tilling or getting in beds that are saturated with moisture because you compact them. And so that's what you're trying to avoid. The idea of soil improvement really relates about increasing the oxygen content and the organic matter, and one leads to the other. Organic matter is more or less porous and adds to the porosity that gives you the oxygen. So if the soil is not saturated, adding compost, organic matter, helps the tilth of the soil. And that is what separates success from failure in a lot of cases. So if you can think of it like that. And then if people can't till, because a lot of people don't have the wherewithal, if they can mulch with an organic matter, ultimately that works itself into the soil, but it takes a bit longer.
Well, you mentioned that we're a little bit of ahead of the game by about a month with the
by one way of calculating.
But we're talking about maybe getting 5 or 6 inches of rain. Is that going to set us back to where we'd normally be in terms of soil prep?
Yes, it will. They will be too. Well, if you have a very tilled soil now, if it's very porous, and then the soil, the moisture will go right through it. And that might not set you back as far as if you have native soil. Native Missouri soil has a high clay content. That stays wet longer, and it might set you back a bit in time.
Having just discussed the issue of pruning here, we have a call from Jay in St. Louis who wants to talk about that particular subject. So let's bring him in. Jay, you're on the air. Go ahead. Hello, Jay. Hey, we'll go back to Jay in a second here. We're waiting to get this line cleared up. Jay, are you there yet? Okay, I'll get back to him in a moment. We have a tweet from Caitlin who writes, I want to grow sweet potatoes in a container this year. How deep should it be? Is concrete or plastic a better container material? Who wants to take that?
Well, go ahead. Go ahead.
Whatever the container is, I would recommend a minimum of 12 inches, preferably 18 inches in depth. Make the container larger than you think you need. Regardless of what the material is that that you're going to be using, I'm a traditionalist. If I could get a large clay pot, I'm going to use a large clay pot. But by all means, make sure that whatever container you use has drainage holes.
Very important. Anything to add to that, Jim?
I was just reading a handout from another botanical garden, and it had a lot about edible vegetables being grown in containers. And what it said that for one sweet potato, you probably need an 18-inch in diameter pot. That's for one plant. You know, it's hard for people to hold back, but if you make them too crowded, none of those sweet potatoes are going to be very big. If that's okay, it's okay.
All righty. Well, we'll come back to Jake and the call we missed a moment ago, but we have to take our break. We'll do that now. We're talking about spring gardening with June Hudson and Chip Tynan from the Missouri Botanical Garden. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with June Hudson and Chip Tynan. We lost Jake again, the caller who tried to get in earlier, but I believe his question had to do, Chip, with pruning birch trees. We were on the subject of pruning, and that's when he called. But is that different from other breeds?
Well, it
beech tree. I'm told a beech tree. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no, a beech tree could be pruned while it's still dormant, and I would encourage him to do that. Before the buds break and start to produce new growth.
Okay, well, I hope that answers Jake's question. I'm sorry he couldn't wait to ask it in person. Okay, we have a couple of emails here for you. Bernice emails, I love tulips. On the packaging, it says to plant in the fall or to put in the freezer for 8 weeks. Is this the only way? Do you have other suggestions? June?
Well, the freezer might be the key word here. Perhaps you should check them and see at what state they are. If they're at all mushy, the time has passed for their viability. Usually when they say to put them into dormancy, excuse me, they're meaning cool temperatures, not freezing temperatures. However, by some fluky thing that they're not frozen, it's really too late to plant tulips. If you could keep them cool enough, not freezing, but cool enough over the summer months, and they're still turgid or, you know, hard, then she could get away with keeping them for next fall to try. But really, they're not at their best shape, I'm sure. But the difference will be if they're turgid or hard or mushy. Mushy's not going to work.
How do you keep them?
Well, you can keep it in an unheated garage against an interior wall where it doesn't, it's not much below freezing or a little bit above freezing. And that will keep them dormant the allotted time needed. And you know when that's over because they start to grow. and you see the green tips coming on. So, but in the freezer, do you agree, Chip?
Sure, absolutely. But the issue of holding them over, you'd have to have specialized a location to keep them cold and dormant.
Right.
And you're not going to have that in your average home. It's just, you know, just like an onion sitting in a wire basket in your kitchen. It's going to waste itself eventually. And fall or spring flowering bulbs, also they answer to internal mechanisms. They know days are longer. I got to go ahead and grow, and they're going to go ahead and use their own stored energy to sprout and grow, and they'll waste and dissipate themselves long before next autumn arrives.
So an onion is not as dumb as it looks, or is that that's the bottom
onions,
line?
Onions can tell us a story.
They can tell us a story.
And tulips can too, really,
yes,
all
exactly.
the spring. They're all in their own biological clock.
Nature is just so marvelous.
It's
planned everything. Another email here, and Chip, I'll start with you on this one. Can you recommend a list of shrubs that are both lovely and deer resistant?
Oh, gosh. You know, I have never lived with. Well, I have lived in deer country, but I wasn't gardening at the time. I'll pass on that particular question, but I'll make the suggestion that we have just a fully comprehensive IPM page on deer that has very comprehensive lists of plants that deers leave alone and plants that deers are more likely to eat. It's on our website. And I would encourage listeners to go to missouribotanicalgarden.org, where they can go to the shortcut is mobot.org. And when you come to the home page, just look for the search box in the upper right-hand corner. Just type in deer. And then hit go. It'll take you to the link that talks all about deer-resistant plants.
We'll put a link to your website on ours at stlpublicradio.org. But June, they can really be damaging to a garden, can't they?
Oh, well, not only do they eat, you know, different things, is that they rub the fur off their antlers, and that does as much or more damage than even eating on them. So it's a complex problem, and the most complex part is that not all deer are alike. You find gardens full of hostas, and they eat everything else, and then there are people who can't grow two leaves on a hosta because they eat them. So, and they seem to be eclectic with their tastes, so that if they don't eat one thing and eat another, that could change. Fencing is the answer.
Fencing, yeah.
Yes.
Well, we're talking about creatures and critters. This question certainly would come up at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we protect our gardens from the rabbits and the moles?
Fencing. Honestly, there are some repellents that are better than others, and they keep coming out with ones that are better. But, again, rabbits can chew their way through plastic fencing, so you have to have a metal fence that you make sure that it's connected to the ground securely so that they don't burrow under it. But fencing is a sure way, and there are a lot of fences out there now because vegetable gardening is so popular.
But that's not going to protect against the voles or moles, is it?
Well, no. That's altogether different.
Yeah.
Moles, you really have to trap with a good mole trap. There's a lot of homemade old-time recipes that work for one mole and maybe not another, but it's not a full cure or remedy. But voles are even worse because they eat rootstock. So you have to get a preventative that is good for moles, but it specifies voles as well. And all you're doing is repelling them and making them go to your neighbor's yard. So that's okay. You know,
neighbor.
Voles are much harder to control than moles.
The short answer is get a fox.
Or a dog or a cat. All those are helpful.
A little terrier, a digging dog.
Terrier.
It's going to make a mess of your garden.
Mm-hmm.
But, foxes are less likely to make a mess of your garden than a digging dog.
That's true.
But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when Missouri Botanical Garden, I think we're in excess of 160 years old now. And when Henry Shaw purchased the botanical garden lands, there were moles down there at the botanical garden. and 170 odd years of perhaps the finest horticultural minds to ever pass through St. Louis have been trying to deal with moles, and we still have to deal with moles. And really, mm-hmm. for the most part, what we've settled on in this modern era is harpoon traps.
Mm-hmm. Harpoon traps. Is that a
yeah.
brand or a particular kind of trap?
It's a style, a type of of trap.
You used to hear that people would try things like cayenne pepper or things like mm-hmm. that.
Give it a try.
Yeah. Give it. Yeah.
Everything seems to work for a little while, you know, and then they just go a block down or a half a block and eat what's there.
Yeah. We mentioned sweet potatoes a little while ago. We have another sweet potato question from David, who tweets, can you recommend a variety of sweet potato that provides better leaves for eating than others, and where can we find it in St. Louis?
To eat the leaves?
Yeah.
Gosh.
I guess it's kind of a green. People would eat that. It's kind of like a greens?
Well, you don't, locally, you don't find a whole lot of variety of sweet potatoes. Vardaman is a really standard that everybody, what's the other one? Beauregard?
Beauregard is one.
Beauregard, yes. Yeah. And if you go to most of the organic farms or like Soulard, that's what you're going to find.
Okay.
Yeah, so eating wise, I am so sorry. I never ate. I'm going to go eat a sweet potato leaf this year.
Okay.
I've never tried that before.
I'll bet you'll be surprised.
I bet I will.
Well, let's move along now. We have, Jenny writes, tweets, any advice on indoor herb gardens?
Well, yes. Lights. Lights in our climate. Think about how many gray days we've had this winter. And herbs love sun. So you're in a compromised climate for winter growing of herbs. You really need to put them in the sunniest window. But having said that, the sun isn't out a lot. So really the only sure way to grow herbs indoors for the winter would be with artificial lights. And that will give them as much sun as you possibly can.
And it works.
And then that will work, yes.
Okay. We're back to the pruning question now. This is a different caller, but let's bring in Phil calling from Baldwin. He has a pruning question. That seems to be the subject of the day. Phil,
topic
go ahead.
Of the day.
Is it too late to prune peach trees? They're dwarf or semi-dwarf. This is about their – this will start in their third season. And I didn't do it in the wintertime like I really wanted to. Or should I just wait till next winter? And I also have a solution that worked for me for getting rid of moles. It also worked for my mother-in-law. She used this battery-operated spike that you put in the ground, and it gave off vibrations and a sound. And I used a solar charging spike, so I didn't have to replace the batteries all the time. And the moles just went over into the other people's yard.
Bill, thanks for the call.
Let's hope they stay there, right? Those are sort of modern versions of the old clippity-clops that our great-grandparents had wind-powered devices like a whirligig that would actually, it was mounted erratically so that it would actually trigger a clacker that would send vibrations through the soil. And, again, that was one of those devices that I alluded to that we've tried at the Missouri Botanical Garden over the last 170 years, yet we still have moles. So it's only a matter of time before they're back.
They work for a while maybe, but not
sure.
Any advice on the pruning of the peach tree? Do we need?
This is a perfect time right now. This week upcoming, we won't have much longer before the peaches actually break dormancy. You want to do that just as the buds about finish up by the time the buds are swelling and before flowers appear.
Okay, we've got a number of people who are using their computers today to get to us. We have Alex emailing, I'm looking for a local source of native wildflower seed mixes. Can your guests make some suggestions where I may be able to procure the seed mix locally?
Well, there is a concern. It's not that local. It's in Jefferson City, but Missouri Wildflowers has a wonderful selection of wildflower mixes along with singular plants and seeds, but the wildflower mixes aren't all alike, And what you want to buy is one that is says right up front they're for the Midwest. Because if you don't get the particular one, you'll get a first year burst of bloom, and then after that it's all downhill because they're not the right species for our area. But places like OK Hatchery is a good one in Kirkwood. A lot of the nurseries now are handling wildflowers because they're so popular, native plants. So anyone that carries a good supply of natives will have probably wildflower mixes. But the mix is the key word. You got to get the right one for our area.
All right. Well,
should be regionalized.
Mm-hmm.
That takes us to our next break time. We'll do that now. Come back and continue our discussion on spring planting and gardening with June Hudson and Chip Tynan. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. My guests in studio are June Hudson and Chip Tynan from the Missouri Botanical Garden. We're talking about issues relating to spring planting and the growing season. And before we move on, Chip, you wanted to add something with regard to the seeds question that came just prior.
Wildflower seeds, traditionally we've sold small packets of popular wildflowers out at the visitor center at our Shaw Nature Reserve out in Gray Summit. That might be another resource that that our caller might want to look into also.
Well, it just brings to mind, you know, is this something people could do or should do online? I imagine you could probably Google whatever you're talking about and find a way to order them online.
Well, nothing would surprise me. It seems like you can get virtually anything through or on the internet. Yeah. So
that's another option. I would think it would have to be an option for.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, Missouri Wildflowers, which I mentioned, he has a website. You can order anything you want from him.
Sure. There you go.
And he has a wonderful catalog. You can ask for a printed catalog, but everything he has is online on a website.
Well, so. I think it was Alex that made that, that call. I hope he's still listening because I think that's probably an easier way for him to go than some of the others I can think of. Okay, we talked a lot so far about pruning, and it was the subject du jour. So are sweet potatoes, apparently, because Stephanie emails, can you recommend a variety of sweet potato? Oh, this is the one we already had. I thought that had disappeared. She wanted to know about eating the leaves.
I was going to
Sorry
say,
about
my
that,
goodness.
Stephanie.
You can eat the leaves of sweet potatoes, but don't eat the leaves of Irish white potatoes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Poisonous.
Yeah, they're poisonous, yeah.
Like the poinsettia, right?
Well, it's a different kind of toxin, but, you know, nonetheless, not to be consumed.
Okay, well, that's certainly good advice. We have LSB Winter tweeting, when and how do I go about dividing hostas and monkey grass?
Well, that's easy. Hostas will be coming up really soon if it stays fairly warm. And when you see their noses come up, you can dig up the whole clump and divide it either with a shovel or hand divide it, whatever you want, make more plants. You need a few eyes on each piece, or a few noses, I should say, not eyes. And you can divide it up. You can even wait, though, until it's more developed for the season. Hostas are very forgiving. So if you can get your shovel in between noses and divide them, you can pretty well wait a while. But once they're fully developed, it's just harder to get in there. It's not that it wouldn't work. And monkey grass, we've already cut, that's liriope, we've already cut some of ours back. It's a logistic thing for us, though, because we have so much. But starting now, but you don't want to wait. Pull it apart. Make sure you don't see the new growth coming up in the middle of the clumps. Because if you cut it back after you can see them, it's most likely you'll snip off the tops of the new growth as well. So do it before you see them emerge more than an inch, and then cut them back neatly, and then they'll be off and running. You can divide them, too, about any time, don't you think, Chip?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very forgiving plant.
Yeah. Now through, November.
I think as long as the ground isn't frozen and we're not in the midst of a crippling drought.
Yeah, both.
I'm sure you two have inspired many people to get into the gardening game who may not have tried it before. For those people who are thinking about, first-timers who are thinking about a garden, what basic tools should they have?
Well, a digging fork, a spade or a shovel.
Good sharp one.
Good sharp one, that's right. Mm-hmm. A nifty little hand trowel. I absolutely love these little Japanese digging knives. We call them hori-horis, H-O-R-I hyphen H-O-R-I.
The best. Uh-huh.
It's just superb. It's everything. It's a pruning, it's a root pruning tool and trowel all in one. Very, very sturdy.
Rake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You got to have a garden rake, a sturdy garden rake, as well as a leaf rake.
Mm-hmm.
A
hoe?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Sharp hoe.
Only a sharp hoe, yeah.
Right.
And then, there's the little specialty tools, hand pruners. I just love these little folding pruning saws that work so well. The blades they come with very sharp blades. It's easy to get in tight quarters and go ahead and make pruning cuts without doing a lot of damage to neighboring branches.
And probably a good pair of gloves.
You bet, especially if you grow roses.
Let's go back to the question of edible leaves. Ariel tweets about tomato plants with edible leaves. Don't the leaves and stems have the toxin tomamine and not recommend to be eaten?
Do not eat tomato leaves. Don't eat potato. Tomatoes and potatoes are kissing cousins. Don't eat the leaves of plants in that family, the Solanaceous family. The sweet potatoes are in the morning glory family, Convolvulaceae. So, they're in a different plant family from Irish potatoes.
Okay, good advice on the leaves. I've never heard that before, which is not terribly surprising, but that. Something everybody should know.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that the plants in that family, the Convolvulus family, the leaves of those are consumed in some Asian heirloom plants that are traditionally consumed in that part of the world.
If people have questions like this, they can always call you over at the garden.
Oh, sure.
That's what you're all about over there, Chip, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we'll have that contact information again on our line. Back to our emails and tweets. Madonna writes, I have a 4-foot-tall non-dwarf pomegranate that's sending out blooms. They open in lovely red blooms. They last a few days and drop off. Is that because it's not outside being pollinated by bees? What's the best date to move it outside?
Well, I was worried there. I thought it was outside. And as I say, my goodness, we want to talk to her. Anyway, it could be because they're not pollinated. Something's not pollinated by whatever gets to it to do that. It's called incomplete pollination, and the fruit has a hard time developing. My guess with that, I'm glad to see it's in that good a shape, but it's also lack of light as well to stimulate the endurance of those blossoms on there, because if it's indoors, maybe she has lights on it. I don't know, but that would be a better idea for the blossoms to be able to maintain themselves, but it may indeed be because of a lack of the correct pollinator indoors. And I'd say May, move that out? Yeah, it has to be warm.
Sometime between Mother's Day and Memorial Day.
Yeah.
We have a contact here from Mark in St. Louis. This goes back to the wildflower seeds question, I think. He says that Mobot, you guys, has meadow in a can, which creates around an acre of Missouri native plant life.
Is it Missouri native plant life? That's the key, is what the ingredients are. Are they really Missouri native species? And a lot of those so-called meadow in a can mixes make a lovely little garden, but a lot of them have non-native, sometimes exotic, annual wildflowers that won't persist locally.
The difference is, to make sure of what it really does say, a lot of things are called native that don't mean they're native here. They just mean they're native somewhere. And that's really a misnomer and kind of awful to voice that off on the public because you're not doing them any favors. So it has to say Missouri native. And then you can kind of hope that they really mean that.
If they're not native, they're not likely to do as well. Because
no, they'll do well 1 year, and then that's about it.
Right. Let's take another email from Stephanie. I've had problems with these squash borers and have not had success at keeping them at bay. I read that not planting any type of squash for 2 years helps to eliminate them. Is this true? Do we know?
Can you really live without squash for 2 years? I would say go ahead and give a try. And you know, there's different things that you can do to combat squash vine borer, but it's a perennial pest in our home gardens. And I think probably the most ecological method of controlling them is actually learn what the eggs look like. And then scout your plants, turn over the leaves, inspect your plants. And when you start to see the eggs being laid, just, you know, go ahead and wipe them off with your and crush them with your thumb or forefinger. And, you know, I alluded earlier to our IPM page on a deer. We also have an IPM page on squash vine borer that's accessible from our website as well.
And would there be a picture there of the eggs?
So beautiful pictures of what the adult looks like. Mm. It's the borer itself is a tiny little, it's a caterpillar that chews its way into the stem of the squash plant. But the adult is a clear-winged moth that looks like a wasp. Huh. And we have pictures of both, of all stages.
Again, we'll have a link to that website on ours at SDOPublicRadio.org. An email here from Amy writes, I have three latticework panels attached to and at the same height as my screened-in porch. What sort of vine or climbing plant might be good here? The spot gets sun most of the day, and I'd love to sit on the porch and feel the green from some plants growing right outside.
It's a great place for hyacinth bean, morning glories. What you want, the key here is knowing or discovering the way vines climb. And some vines put out rootlets like ivy that stick. They adhere to the structure. But something like a latticework need vines that twirl, that have tendrils, and they attach themselves to your structure. And they're more likely to do well on a lattice structure. So first of all, whatever you look up what kind of flower you like and see if it has tendrils or rootlets that stick. Because once they stick, they're there. And that's probably not the kind of vine she's thinking about.
Our time is winding down, but maybe we can get one problem solved. David, who had asked a question earlier, has tweeted, sweet potato leaves cooked in sauces in West Africa, also very good in green smoothies. So
there you go.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, thank you.
Any final thought you'd like to leave us with in our last 30 seconds, Chip and June?
Well, just get on out there. Get your hands dirty. Get down on your knees. The secret to a green thumb is brown knees.
That's
words,
really good.
Words to live by for the garden, June.
Get out in your garden, learn what looks right, and when you discover something you don't know, try to look it up and see if it's a good guy or a bad guy and act accordingly.
All right, and take advantage of the Missouri Botanical Garden website. Thank you both, June Hudson and Chip Tyner, for being with us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you guys. I always learn so much, and I'm sure our audience does too.
Thank you very much.
That's going to do it for us for today. We will, of course, be back tomorrow. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.